Okay, everybody, workday's over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
Low-key busy weekend in sports.
Was that an exciting Masters finish or not?
I need to explain this to me, Giglio. Was there drama or not?
No, not on Sunday. Saturday was really good after the rain. Xander Schauffele and Hideki Matsuyama were both really, really good after the rain on Saturday. Will Zalatoris as well. A lot of good shot making, just completely different than what it looked like the first 2 days because of how dry and how fast it was.
See, to me, the ending on Sunday with Hideki Matsuyama winning the Masters ended up having some sizzle and excitement to it. Not because, I mean, what was it? Schauffele had the, he got it in the drink and finished what, six? Was it six on a three? Was, if I'm not mistaken, is that the hole right? Regardless.
Your terminology is interesting.
Well, you and Golden Alec can all have a laugh at how I talk about golf, all right? So feel free.
You can just call it a triple bogey.
Yeah, a triple, is that what it's called, a triple bogey?
If it's a six on a three, yes.
Six on a three is a triple bogey. Got it. Thank you. So just give me max par. Do I have that right? Either way, the drama came from here's a guy in Hideki Matsuyama who would be the first male Japanese golfer to win a major and the Masters, right? Big deal. And you could tell with, what do you finish? Bogey, bogey, par, bogey? Is that how it all ended out?
Yes.
Okay. So to me, that's where the drama was within. Like, could he at least keep it together as the pressure started to build of not just breaking through with a major victory, but also how it's going to be received? Because, as been discussed most of the day today, that in Japan, this is a huge deal for Hideki Matsuyama. You also have the Olympics theoretically starting this summer. You telling me that Matsuyama's not going to be front and center with opening ceremonies rocking that green jacket? I mean, the dude's going to make a lot of money on endorsements because of the fact that he's the Masters winner. So I think there was a human element to the way the Masters ended with Matsuyama that made it somewhat entertaining. Have there been better, more dramatic finishes? Yeah, of course there have been. But in terms of personal stories, that was pretty awesome to see how it all unfolded. But all that being said, I don't know if that resonates with the majority of people because I kind of got the sense that the Masters was low-key. I didn't get a lot of buzz for the Masters over the weekend. I don't know if it was because of the rain, maybe the lack of drama on Sunday, maybe it was a lack of notable names, like Xander Schauffele is not a name that's going to get people going. Zalatoris might be interesting for ACC Network people, but it's not necessarily something that's going to get a lot of people going. I'm telling you right now, if it was somebody like Ricky Fowler that was going to finally break through, then maybe there would have been a bit more buzz to it. But I just got the sense that there wasn't much buzz to the Masters this year.
I think the rain didn't help on Saturday. Mm-hmm. It didn't help either that Justin Thomas really took himself out of contention with a triple on 15 on Saturday. People like Justin Thomas. They gravitate towards Justin Thomas. Jordan Spieth never really got it going on Sunday. John Rahm was the only player to get it going on Sunday. He shot a 66, and he had one of those tee off in the morning, nobody cares, just turn in a great round, and he still ended up four shots back. So to your point about could the rails have gone off for Matsuyama, yes, he bogeyed the first hole. Will Zalatoris birdied the first two holes. But then Matsuyama really settled himself down on the front nine, first nine, as I like to say there. It was a better story in the finish than it was actually compelling.
Yeah.
And I think the true problem is, to your point about the names who were contending, and even then, like, does Dustin Johnson or even Brooks Koepka or maybe a Bryson DeChambeau, if they were one of them, you know, tickling away at it, but they weren't.
You brought up the name that actually, to me, would have been interesting to see had he been in contention, Bryson DeChambeau, because I think that's when the hate watching comes in.
Yeah.
There is an element of hate watching. Now with Brooks Koepka specifically, because I think people kind of know what his deal is now. For somebody like DeChambeau, there would have been so many think pieces that it would have been written over the way that guy has changed himself, the debates about what he's doing to the game. I mean, last week we talked about that Wired story that specifically talked about DeChambeau hitting the ball not just to bomb it, but being strategic in how you bomb it and how course designers are going to have to adjust to this. This is not a new phenomenon because, as we've talked about in the past, Tiger Woods also was thought to be a guy who was going to change the way golf courses were designed. You remember tiger-proofing the Masters was a thing 20 years ago or whatever it is. I do think that people would have hate-watched Bryson DeChambeau, but after that Thursday, wasn't really much of anything for him. So are they doing this again in November?
Every 6 months?
Are we getting mad? Would people not love the Masters every 6 months?
Maybe that's why the Masters is the Masters, because it's once a year.
Maybe.
And to your point last week about the setting and seeing it and then knowing that it's spring, I think that's more of a Northern States type of feeling.
Yeah, maybe.
Right?
Yeah.
I think we spoke with Steve Politti last week from NJ.com, and when you see the Masters on TV and you see it looks like the actual visualization of spring with the colors and the green, just how green everything is. And as Bomani Jones pointed out to us, how it really coincided with the birth of HD television, and they've really taken advantage of that. I'm the kind of person who watches golf, and I like it when they go to different places. I watch the European Tour just to see them go when they go to and play in South Africa. Mm. Like, that's me. I like the ambient surroundings. I like all of that. That's part of golf that I like, but I'm a little bit different that way.
From our guy Bain on Twitter, the North Carolina weather on Sunday did not help with my interest for the Masters.
Yeah, man, I played a four hours and 40 minute round on Sunday, teeing off a little bit early, thinking I'll get it done and come home, and that didn't happen.
No, did it happen?
I watched most of Saturday. Really, Matsuyama on Saturday was just unbelievable. He had 6 birdies on the last 8 holes. I mean, he put on a show on Saturday.
Yeah, Sunday, I will admit that our friends reached out to us and they're like, hey, we're getting on the lake. You want to join us? And we're just looking at the weather going, yeah, let's go. So if I have a glow about me today, it's because we actually went to Sharon Harris. So I
was
just
going to say, you might want to keep that time private, Joe.
I am radiating today. Let me tell you. So, actually, it's funny. We've never taken the kids out that way, and my kids have been super into The Simpsons as of late.
So they got a big kick out.
So they got a big kick out of seeing that big old cooling tower, the Sharon Harris cooling tower. I was like, you think we can catch a three-eyed fish? And they're like, wait, are those for real? I was like, guys, it's a Simpsons show. Come on now. Relax on that one. Over the weekend, NC State had their spring game. And during the broadcast, both on the Wolfpack Sports Radio Network, which you can listen to here on 99.9 The Fan, and on the ACC Network, where Wes Durham and Roddy Jones were on the call, they were making references to the fact that head coach Dave Dorn was going to get a contract extension. Details seem to be that it's going to be an extension that takes him out to 2025, and that's about all we know. I guess things are being finalized. It has to be approved by the Board of Trustees. I mean, he's getting this extension, but we don't know much about it, Julio. What am I missing here?
Where would you like me to start on this one?
Wherever you want to start.
Okay. I'm going to try to make this succinct. Debbie Yao liked contracts that included a lot of bonuses for different reasons. We saw this year that actually Dave Dorn got a bonus when his team won 8 games. Okay. Bonuses for bowl trips, they're pretty standard. Bonuses for top 25 finishes, also standard. The wins per season, or ACC wins per season, which was one of Debbie's favorite little peccadilloes in there, Bukorgan doesn't love. You saw this with Kevin Keats. He reworked his contract, remember, before this basketball season, and a lot of that stuff was taken out of that contract. I anticipate on Friday that this contract will be more streamlined, more compensation for Dave, kind of probably up front, and some of those bonuses on the back end taken away. If you looked at Dave's contract this year, and it was a pandemic, so his bonuses were cut in half, but he would have had a $200,000 in bonuses this year for going 8-5 or 8-4. I don't know about you, Joe, but do you really think 8-4 is a 200? I mean, in general, is that a $200,000 bonus to you?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay. But that's the way that Debbie had structured her contracts. That's the way she liked to structure the contracts. Debbie Yao, former AD. New AD is Boo Corrigan. So I think that, and you have the plain old recruiting purposes of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're recruiting a kid in 2021, you want to say to them, I'm going to be here through 2025, which is what this deal will do. We'll push Dave Doran through 2025.
Okay. This sounds like standard operating procedure to me.
Yeah, there's two very valid reasons to do it right there. If you think the structure should change and
mm-hmm.
you're the new boss in Boo Corrigan,
yeah.
new, still I used for 2 years. We just saw this with Kevin Keats and how mm-hmm. they redid his deal. So I think that's a perfectly valid reason. We could get into the ins and outs of the recruiting, you know, promises, and this is how people end up paying off Will Muschamp and other coaches, but this is what everybody does. It's standard operating procedure.
That's what I mean by standard operating procedure. We actually just saw this with Mack Brown at North Carolina, where I took that more of a continuity with the coaching staff, more so than Mack Brown himself. But if you wanted to extend that out to, hey, when Mack Brown first got this job, the conventional wisdom, and even I talked about this, was, well, you know, he's probably going to be the coach for 5 years, and they're going to hand it off to somebody else after that when the program gets right. That can be used against you in recruiting. So if you give no indication that you're winding things down, well, that's a good sign. And the same thing with Dave Doran. His contract was throughout 2023. It's not like he's had a consistent level of success at NC State, and you have hot seat talk and everything else, or you want to counter what's going on at North Carolina, you want to try to shore up recruiting, well, then, yeah, you solidify the dude for the next couple of years. I just view this as a very shoulder-shruggy contract extension. I would not try to extract any deeper meaning out of what's going on with Dave Doran.
But who was?
Dan Wolkin, USA Today.
Gotcha.
Columnist for USA Today tweets out one of the, I think it was Corey over at Pack Pride who had tweeted out initially, and Dan Wolkin retweeted that was by saying, I guess averaging eight wins a year at NC State gets you contract extensions. And, well, two things. One, Dave's not averaging 8 wins a year at NC State. Now, if you want to play semantics with me, strike the first year of Dave Doran's time at NC State because it was literally a year zero, fine. You want to bring up the disastrous 2019 season that was riddled with injuries where they went 4-8, fine.
Is this the SATs? You get to throw out the...
Oh, I know. This is what I love. This is what I love. It's like I'm giving you the factual statement. He's not an 8-win-a-year average coach.
6.8.
That's the average, okay? Yep. But if you want to play the semantics, if you want to Jeff Bizdelic this, if you take away that 30-point run, we're right in this game, okay, fine. I'll allow that for you. It doesn't explain the ACC record, which is not very good.
28-38.
Not very good. All of this is to say, though, if Dave Doran was averaging 8 wins a year, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, you're talking about a football program that for all time, which goes back to 1892, their win percentage is 51%.
Yes, it's a perpetually 500 program. I would make the same argument about North Carolina.
Yeah, theirs is not much better.
It's not much better. And when we talk about
traditionally, of course,
when we talk about North Carolina and NC State, we have to talk about them in the context like 90% of college football programs out there. These are not year in, year out favorites. They are not college football playoff contenders. Maybe there's a dark horse season every now and again, and I think that's the measure of success that I would use for NC State and North Carolina, but specific to NC State. Success for Dave Doran is winning 7 or 8 times a year. Mix in a signature win, which most State fans would tell you he does not have. I think there's a retroactive one to that Louisville Thursday night game with Lamar Jackson being the quarterback. Fine, give him that one. But if you could put yourself in position to have a breakthrough season every 4 to 5 years, well, then you're doing a good job at NC State. And I know that Dave Doran is not the sexiest hire. He's not exactly lighting the world on fire with his quips and his storytelling and everything else. But for the most part, NC State's a pretty solid program under Dave Doran. And they had a pretty freaking good year in a pandemic, all things considered. Now, the proof is in the pudding this upcoming season, Julio, because they are in position again to have another, at least projected, good season, albeit people being healthy. The next step for Devin Leary, a defense that looks like it's going to be pretty damn legit next year. That's how you should be looking at NC State in the grand scheme of things.
You don't agree.
No, I'm laughing. I've had this conversation. So I went to the game on Saturday. I've had this conversation a couple different times in the last couple weeks. And one person I know within the program thinks this will be Dave's best team. And I kind of stopped and thought, I see what you're saying in terms of the opportunity and the experience.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the game, as I like to say, the Herb Brooks, the game Dave's going to take to his grave is the Clemson home game in 17. Not the Bambard kick, the one the next year where they Jacoby Myers converts the fourth down, but Stephon Louis had a procedural penalty. The play is called back. They end up losing after Ryan Finley throws an interception on fourth down. That's the game where NC State legitimately had a chance to win an ACC title, or at least the Atlantic Division title. Were they going to lose in the championship game? Who knows? I mean, that's going to be the ultimate test of NC State stuff, by the way, is when NC State finally does win the Atlantic Division and then gets to the Coastal.
Yeah.
Gets to the championship game and then loses to the Coastal champion. I think we all know that is already written in the stars, right? Like, I don't need to be the one who breaks that one to you. But what they were saying to me is they think the secondary, which has always been a problem, is going to be better this year.
It's going to be
better, yeah. They have transfers from Marshall and Florida State, who they really, really like.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Derek. It's D'Eric. D-Rec or D-Eric. I'll get it right by the time the season starts. Pitts.
Mm-hmm.
Marshall kid. Actually played for Tony Gibson at West Virginia as well. They really like him. Cyrus Fagan is a kid from Florida State who they like. And that's the point, is they feel like A through Z. Like maybe the 17 team, certainly 1 through 30. You know, there was 12 pros on that team.
Yes.
The thought process with this NC State team is it's truly 1 through 45, 1 through 50.
It's got depth.
They feel a whole lot better than anything Dave's ever had before.
Okay.
In terms of a roster. Now, to your point, it is contingent upon Devin Leary really taking another step. My question to our friend Josh Goodson at Sports Channel 8 was, is Devin Leary a better quarterback than Ryan Finley? And you know my opinion of Ryan Finley. He was a perfectly acceptable quarterback.
He was an operator, yeah.
Perfectly acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Was he elite? Was he a difference maker?
No.
You could argue compared to, sure, the team in 19 that had no quarterback, certainly he was. But to me, there's a standard at NC State. That is Phillip Rivers. That is Russell Wilson. That's the standard. I didn't make the standard up. So either you live up to the standard or you don't. And I'm still not sold on Devin Leary being in that class. So that's all. That's what I want to see. That's the class I want to see at NC State.
Yeah. I don't think he's in that class either, but I'm not even asking Devin Leary to be in that class. I'm just not.
But why not? See, I'm not sure their receivers are that great. That's what gives me pause about this team.
The problem that NC State has had at quarterback goes beyond just, are you the next Phillip Rivers? Are you the next Russell Wilson? Are you the next Jacoby Brissett, for that matter, right?
Right.
The problem that NC State has had at the quarterback position is they've had no consistency. Can they have a season where they have
health.
A guy?
Sure.
And it's health matters, right? Well, actually, in 2019, it wasn't health. It was simply nobody elevated straight up, okay? They went in with, I can't remember the guy's name now.
Matt McCoy.
Matt McCoy. And didn't work out, right? They were ultimately conservative, but the reason why they were conservative is because they knew he wasn't going to go out there and lose them a game, right? And then they moved to Bailey Hockman. And Bailey Hockman... It was
Bailey Hockman. You're right.
No, Matt McKay. Thank you. Thank you, Rand. So they went with McKay. Didn't work out.
Right.
Went to Hockman.
Right.
Didn't work out. Then they went to Devin Leary.
Everybody got to try.
Nobody elevated. And we wanted to see things in the guy who came up third in Devin Leary. Now, we finally got to see a glimpse of what Devin Leary was capable of in, what was it, the Pitt game, right?
Yes.
Without these things in front of me, I'm trying to base these things
off. No, last year
off
was the
head.
Pick game. Yeah.
It was the pick game, which was like that Devin Leary, this is it. All right, it looks like you actually have a guy. And then what happened? Devin Leary got hurt. Now, last year, I found myself in a weird position where I was like the number one Bailey Hockman fan account because I felt like people like, well, put Ben Finley in there. Why? We saw Ben Finley in that North Carolina game and he was in over his head. Why would you want to do that to him? More than anything else, you probably hurt his development than anything else. Bailey Hockman did exactly what he was asked to do. It ended up being an adventure of a season, but it ended up working out. So now what? Devin Leary healthy.
But again, I can't say definitively that Devin Leary is that guy. We haven't seen enough of him. But I shout out to the people who apparently have, even beyond the coaching staff. Is it football season yet? Can we do this? How many more months do we have?
Saturday was interesting.
How many more months do we have of this?
Well, you know, what's very comforting about Saturday was just how many familiar names NC State has.
Yeah, that's
Carolina's going to be in the same boat, too, don't forget, because they have everybody back other than, you know, those four skill players.
Yeah. We're joined now on the Heiser Automotive Group hotline by Mike Maniscalco, play-by-play for the Carolina Hurricanes. He was not traded at the deadline. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Doing fantastic, guys. How are you?
So the Canes did one of these things where, well, looks like there's not going to be a trade. They're going with the team they've got, the stretch run going into the playoffs, and then we get that, like, you know, 320 just at the deadline getting processed deal where they've shipped Hayden Fleury off to Anaheim for a sixth rounder and another Finnish player. Do I have this right?
You do. Defenseman Yanni Hakanpaa is a right shot defenseman. Big guy, 6'5", listed as 218, probably plays a little bit heavier than that. He likes to hit people. That's the scouting report that I have, and he'll probably slot in on that third defensive pairing, mm-hmm. playing alongside either Jake Dean or Jake Gardner for the Canes. But, yeah, I mean, this happens all the time. And this year, guys, I know everybody gets all excited about certain days in sports and trade deadline days for sure. This year, it was going to be tough to get stuff done because – you're thinking not just of this year, but you've got a flat salary cap. Mm. How are you going to fit things in? What's the asking price? Can you get guys north of the border because of COVID and the protocols of being able to sit out and who can come in and play right away? So there were a lot of moving parts this year with the NHL trade deadline, but the Canes wanted to add a right shot defenseman who can play a little bit of a heavy game, and it looks like that's what they've done so far here today.
Mike Maniscalco, play-by-play for the Carolina Hurricanes, Bally Sports, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. Let's focus on that then. I know that defensive depth was something that was on the want list for this Carolina Hurricanes team, but you've alluded to it now a couple times when talking about Hakanpaa, who was acquired by the Carolina Hurricanes for Hayden Fleury, if you're just tuning in, that he can hit. Yeah, a little bit bigger dude. It seems as though in division play, after these teams keep seeing each other, the MO on the Canes is to kind of be physical with them, get them off their game. The Canes want to play their way, and they've had to kind of drag down to a level they probably don't want to play. Is this an answer to that in some form or fashion?
You know, it's funny you bring that up, Joe, because I think that people want to put that storyline out there for this team.
Okay.
You know, Dallas tried to do that, and the Canes laid 54 hits on them a few nights ago. So it's, I think that, you know, people rightly or wrongly will put a label on a team or a player, and that'll follow them around for a while. This team is tough to play against, but I also think that when we're talking hockey, a lot of folks get stuck in the 1980s, 1990s, and then, of course, the great, you know, George Roy Hill film Slap Shot, that you think that's just how the game is played. And it's so different now. It's still physical. You still need guys like that. But, you know, the guys who run out and beat up people, those days are over. You got to have foot speed. You got to play the positions so much more differently today than maybe even did 10 years ago just from watching the game. But this is a guy who brings an element to the blue line, you know, a bit of thump. You hear that. And, you know, people like to use words that they you know, he's got grit in his game or other – more colorful terms. But yeah, that's what the Canes were looking for because, you know, you look at what that bottom pair was and what it was turning into, be it, you know, Jake Dean with Hayden Fleury or now Jake Gardner, who's back in the mix. They're all kind of the same players. And sometimes you want to add something different, you know, a little different spice into the mix. And that's what Hakanpaa is going to bring to the table here. Now, one of the knocks on him was he is physical, but he's not physical all the time. I think that once he knows what his role is here, what he has to play, kind of think of what Joel Edmondson was for the Hurricanes last year.
Okay.
They've been looking for that, and I think that's the role that they want him to fill.
Mike Maniscalco joining us here on the OG. You can listen to him tonight right here on 99.9 The Fans, Canes in Detroit, 7 o'clock. Mike, it's the 1,000th game for Jordan Staal, and you just mentioned the old way that hockey was played, and I'd argue from 1975 to 1990, the NHL was probably the NHL. But is the most amazing thing about Jordan Staal is that he's been able to keep up with the NHL and just how much it has changed since he debuted in 2006?
Yeah, you know, that's a pretty good point there, Joe. And I think one of the reasons why he's been able to maintain is because he hasn't really changed at all. You know, what his game is from when he came into the league to what he is now in his 15th season and going into his 1,000th game tonight, he's always been heavy to play against, hard to play against. I think that one of the knocks on big guys, especially forwards, is when they skate, people don't think they're fast because, you know, it's the, I always equate it to the Flintstones thing, which is when you see the feet moving fast, oh, they got to be going fast. Well, if you're longer, you can take a longer stride and get there in the same amount of, you know, four or five strides for somebody else. But the one thing that Jordan Staal has done his entire career, Joe, he's kept himself in fantastic shape. I mean, he is in fantastic shape from the day he got in. You might even argue he's in better shape today than when he came into the league with how he takes care of himself. So he's been able to do that. He's understood his role. And he's one of these guys you look at and you talk about, you know, intangibles. He's the guy setting that kind of pace in the locker room with the work ethic that he brings in and how he brings it every single day. And the fact that, you know, he never tried to become something that he's not is why he's gotten to this point in his game. And, you know, everybody gets enamored with stats, and now there's even more stats and more stats to lump on him. But, you know, we look at goals and assists, and, you know, he put up some numbers early in his career in Pittsburgh when everybody was putting up numbers with those Pittsburgh Penguins team when they won that first cup that he was a part of. But you take a look every night, he's playing against the other team's best. He's blocking shots. He's delivering hits. He's eating up major minutes, you know, playing about 17, 18 minutes a night, more than that on most evenings. You know, he's checked off all of those boxes, and that's how he's been able to get here.
Mike Maniscalco, Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. All right, so they've got all three goalies. Nobody was traded, which I don't hate. I do think that with the stretch run in the playoffs, something's going to happen where you're going to need all three to be available to you. But do I have this right? Is James Reimer starting tonight?
James Reimer is starting tonight, yes.
Do you find that interesting, considering that Mrazek and Nedeljkovic have been the hot hands?
I think that one of the things you talked about, Joe, which is you're going to need all three of these guys. You can't let somebody get stale, and you've got to find a way to. And if you're going down the road of that James Reimer is the number three of options one, two, and three, you've got to get him games when you can. And this is a game that I'd look at where you could put him in against Detroit, especially with the run that's going to be coming on. The Canes have 2 days off in between games, I should say, 2 days in between games after tonight. So I think that's when you just really start to load it up. And that's when you'll probably see a little bit more Peter Mrazek. Maybe he'll be the guy who gets every other start. But you want to keep James Reimer sharp just for that reason, what you said, going into the playoffs or going down the stretch. You don't want to have to turn to him and have him not be ready, because practice is where it's going to be really hard for this team to keep a goaltender sharp. They're going to have to pick a guy who, all right, well, you missed practice today. You got to go work with the taxi squad.
Mike Maniscalco, Canes play-by-play here on the OG. All right, man, appreciate the time. I know that Don Waddell is addressing the media at around 4:30. We'll be curious to see his thoughts on this. Hockenpah? That's how you pronounce
it? Hockenpah.
Well,
that's what I'm going with. That's what I've been told.
All I know is that Sebastian Aho's house for wayward Finns will have another person in it. So,
well, you know, Finns have done very well with this hockey club. So, I mean, this could be a – I'm not going to go for a pun. This could just be a big win for the Kings. So.
Okay. All right, Mike. We'll talk to you later, man.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Let's give you the hot and cold. Another weekend in the books. Low-key, sneaky, busy sports weekend. And we give you our hot and cold from the weekend, thanks to our friends at Any Day Heating and Cooling, a family-owned company you can trust. Giglio, who is your hot of the weekend?
Oh, has to be Hideki Matsuyama winning the Masters, particularly on Saturday. Six birdies in his last eight holes. He actually had an eagle win on the same hole Xander Schauffele eagled, and it was just a clutch putt, clutch performance, especially at Augusta, where the course was really beating up everyone else. So hats off to Hideki Matsuyama on winning the Masters.
Rand, do we have the call from Jim Nance on CBS with Matsuyama winning? I need a ruling on this call.
We may?
Maybe?
Yes, we do. Okay. I had to find it somewhere else, actually. Here we go.
Okay.
My bad.
All right.
little putt action first.
It is the Masters. You have to be quiet.
It's okay. Right down to the wire. Who predicted that by one? Matsuyama is Japan's first Masters champion.
I thought Nance also said something about, like, it's Mats or something like that. Regardless, good for Matsuyama. Good for his bank account, too. Because if there's one thing that Matsuyama's forever going to be doing is being referred to as Masters champion Hideki Matsuyama in Japan. He is going to make so much endorsement bank back in Japan. It's ridiculous. And if the Olympics do actually happen with the opening ceremonies and everything like that, who do you think you're going to see front and center? Hideki Matsuyama in a green jacket. It'll be quite the spectacle. My hot actually goes to noted reggaeton enthusiast Bad Bunny. Are you familiar with Bad Bunny?
Not really.
Actually, I've told Rand in the past that we should probably bump with more Bad Bunny because I do love that dude. He puts out some great stuff. So he at one point was the 24/7 champ for the WWE.
That's right. Yes, I did know that.
And then he immediately lost it. But then he was in a tag team match at WrestleMania on Saturday where he went up against The Miz, who is an old MTV Real World reality star. And I'm old enough to remember when that dude was on The Real World and he talked about going. He always wanted to be a WWE superstar. Yeah. And to his credit, it's actually happened. The guy has a bit of that charisma that makes it work. Anyway, Bad Bunny, I did not realize this, huge wrestling fan and put in all the work to put on an actual high-flying tag team performance on Saturday. He impressed a hell of a lot of people. Celebrity WWE, and you go back to the WCW, anytime you bring a celebrity out there, usually doesn't work
out
well.
It's a struggle, yeah.
It really is a struggle. Bad Bunny put on a freaking show. I didn't watch WrestleMania, but I watched the replay and a lot of the clips, and it was pretty impressive what he's able to do.
Well, it's a two-night WrestleMania now, Joe. It's like a whole weekend type of deal. It's maybe a little bit too much. I was happy to see fans, though, back in the stands. That's the one entertainment aspect that has really struggled without fans. Really. I mean, if you grew up watching wrestling at all, you don't even realize how important the reaction, the pop of the fans is compared to the product. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the studio, those studio WWE Raw,
Thunderdome things,
that stuff, it didn't necessarily work out all that well. I mean, they had to put on those shows to put something on TV, but yeah.
Yeah, much like the ACC network, they needed to fill their inventory, their television inventory that they were paid handsomely for, so.
Who is your cold of the weekend?
My cold of the weekend is Bill Belichick. First, he's on the hot seat, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least I've been told so by LeVar Arrington. And now Julian Edelman, his contract has been terminated by the Patriots. This has caused some stir on the Twitters that Edelman, their longtime receiver, Super Bowl MVP, will end up, of course, with the Buccaneers. But Adam Schefter just tweeted that Edelman's contract being terminated is part of a technicality for his retirement. And the expectation is that Edelman will retire.
Oh.
Kind of like Gronk?
Well,
maybe.
Don't people retire in Florida, don't they? Isn't that where people go to retire?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
There's a place in which he can retire. That would be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Which leads us to the inevitable argument. Is Julian Edelman a Hall of Famer, Joe Ovius?
No, he's not a Hall of Famer. He put up some good numbers in the playoffs because he happened to be the weapon of choice for Tom Brady. But in terms
Shouldn't that carry more weight than being good during the regular season?
I mean, are we only going to highlight one particular thing? I mean, Hall of Famers are guys that do it not just in the regular season,
sure,
but in the postseason as well. This business that we'll look at his playoff stats. Cool. So are we also going to say Robert Horry is on the same level of other people who have won multiple rings? No. We don't do that, do we?
We usually don't
scoff at that idea.
We don't.
So don't insult the position by trying to put Julian Edelman in a Hall of Fame class.
Robert Horry made a lot of good shots, though. Like, his numbers, I don't believe, took a overall wholesale jump in playoffs compared to his regular season performance. He made a lot of timely shots.
Mm-hmm.
I think Julian Edelman's performance in the playoffs make multiple times, not just one time, right?
Yeah.
Like, aren't we about to put Eli Manning into the Hall of Fame? I mean, we're going to put Eli Manning into the Hall of Fame.
Different.
This would have been a more interesting conversation if Julian Edelman didn't play in Boston.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think it's different for Eli Manning, too, based on position. So the quarterback is going to elevate him. Also, his last name elevates him in a way.
Sure.
Other
but I think for the
not.
Most part, Eli Manning is going to be in the Hall of Fame because of the two Super Bowls and where he played and where he won those two Super Bowls.
Who's the better wide receiver, Torrey Holt or Julian Edelman?
Torrey Holt's the better receiver than Julian Edelman.
Okay. But
then there's room for both of them in the Hall of Fame.
There is room for both of them in the Hall of Fame, but the way people
would you like to bet if Julian Edelman will make the Hall of Fame? You wouldn't bet against it, though, right?
I would not bet against it.
The popularity of him, where he played.
That is a separate conversation.
Okay, that's all. That's
a separate conversation.
What I was getting at is that's going to be factored into the process.
Yes.
Not necessarily, I want to bet on his regular season numbers.
When it comes to the Football Hall of Fame, it's also important to note that they have requirements.
It's a nut.
There are requirements to put people in Canton. They have to put in new people in Canton every year. This is not like Major League Baseball where
they
you
can
could
just
have,
say, hey,
you're going,
no
you
class.
Know what? No
Nobody
class
was
this year.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So by default, you're going to have people that go to the Hall of Fame that you go, eh. This is why in my years of doing sports talk radio, I don't get too wrapped up in Hall of Fames. What are Hall of Fames ultimately? They are museums.
A museum.
So what do museums do? They tell the whole story.
Well,
and if you feel...
You hope.
That's what I'm getting at. If you feel that you can't tell the story of the NFL without Julian Edelman, okay, fine. Put him in. He certainly is part of that with Tom Brady and the Patriots in that run. Individually, though, I'm not quite sure he's a Hall of Famer, but he's going to get in, so it really doesn't matter what I think. My cold of the weekend goes to USA Today columnist Dan Wolkin. I like Dan. I would consider Dan a wonderful acquaintance in the media business. But Dan sometimes seems to forget that not all college football programs are the same. And there was a report. Would you even qualify it as a report, Julio? People were talking about Dave Doran, NC State head football coach, during the spring game. They were talking about his contract extension. I didn't see an official release. I know you didn't see an official release. You were there on Saturday for the spring game. And it seemed like it was just kind of one of these low-key, it's going to happen.
I was driving in and I was stunned when Gary Hahn was congratulating Dave Doran.
Okay, so he's getting a contract extension and we can explore that conversation later. The point of this, though, and why I'm giving Dan Wolkin the cold of the weekend is because upon that news, he retweeted a Pack Pride story with averaging 8 wins a year equals job security at NC State. Now, some people pushed back on that sort of stuff. Dave Doran's not averaging 8 wins a year. There's issue number one, okay? Issue number two, if Dave Doran was averaging 8 wins a year, I would argue that he wouldn't still be at NC State. He'd be a hot enough commodity that he probably would have left for an SEC job, like when Tennessee came calling eventually when things started getting off the rails. Now, I do think that Dave Doran made ultimately the correct decision of leveraging Tennessee into a contract extension and getting bumped in pay to about middle-tier ACC coach status. But he would have been eaten alive at Tennessee, given how – it's like Game of Thrones over there, man. Tennessee's – why? Why would you ever want to take that job, given how they'll just stab you in the back at any moment? Let's go.
Yeah. It's time for Rant 2.
Acapella the news.
All right, boys. Well, big Masters weekend, obviously. I was going to sing about Hideki Matsuyama, but I couldn't be creative enough for that. However, our guy Xander Schauffele, shout out to Gilio. He and I were talking about this last week, and Schauffele, he almost won, and he actually would have, with a better shot at 16, maybe come closer. So a little killing me Schauffele here.
Oh, no.
Strumming pain with his 8-iron, trying to stay in par with his wedge. Killing me softly with his shot, killing me softly with his shot. Losing the whole round in one hole, killing me softly. with his shot.
It was sad.
I heard he had a good shot as he approached 16. And so I watched his attempt, 184 to the green. I didn't think it mattered till Hideki bogeyed 18, strumming my pain with his 8-iron, trying to save par with his wedge, killing me softly with his shot, killing me softly with his shot.
Yeah, it was that good.
I didn't hate it.
I know, man. Like, it just...
That was actually pretty good.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m., and you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.